Good morning. It's Friday, August 16th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, a trip along one of the most dangerous paths migrants take to get to the United States. What we know about the charges in connection with Matthew Perry's death. And Elmo helps us look at our mental health. But first, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are out on the campaign trail this week, pitching voters on their different visions for the economy. It's an issue that consistently polls among the most important for voters, and in a Trump-Biden matchup, was polling in Trump's favor. But Democrats say the data is on their side, with inflation easing further and the Fed expected to drop interest rates soon. Joining me now to talk about what we're hearing from the candidates is my colleague Gideon Resnick. Hey, Gideon.
Hey, Shamita. Good to be back.
So tell me, former President Trump spoke on Wednesday. He laid out his economic plan for voters. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so one of the big takeaways from the speech was Trump's apparent openness to widespread tariffs. This is something that he has said before. He previously said he wanted to propose a 10% tariff on all U.S. trading partners. And in fact, in this speech, he said anything between 10 and 20. The Washington Post reports that the former president also again called for eliminating taxes on tips and on Social Security, and promised to lower energy costs. He also said he wants to extend tax cuts from his administration. And Trump criticized the Biden-Harris administration for their handling of inflation, with a focus on the price of one particular good in the grocery store.
When you look at the costs of groceries, the costs of bacon, where it went up 4 and 5 times. Bacon. I don't order bacon anymore. It's too expensive.
Now, the Wall Street Journal notes that Trump is right. The price of bacon has risen in recent years, but not as much as he says. Economists also tell the Journal that his proposed tariffs and plans for mass deportations could, in fact, drive inflation up. Deportations, particularly, would potentially worsen labor shortages in some industries.
So that's Trump. Vice President Harris is also expected to talk about the economy today. What do we know about what she might say?
Yeah, so it shouldn't come as a surprise that a lot of the focus is on regular everyday prices like groceries as well. We're going to be hearing that from both candidates throughout the campaign. In fact, Harris is expected to unveil a federal ban on price gouging in food and grocery industries. We should say we don't quite know the full details yet of how this exactly might work, but the early reporting suggests that a Harris administration would use the Federal Trade Commission and state attorneys general to impose penalties on companies that violate a proposed ban. She's also expected to call for paid family leave, an expanded child tax credit, and lowering housing costs. Part of the housing plan reportedly will include a call for building millions of new units and a tax incentive for builders who construct for first-time home buyers. Meanwhile, she and the Biden administration did get another win this week. They successfully negotiated to lower Medicare prices for 10 drugs, with the policy and new prices set to take effect in early 2026.
2 years ago, as vice president, I was proud to cast the tie-breaking vote that sent the bill. That gave Medicare the power to negotiate and let it get to the president's desk. And I was proud when our president, Joe Biden, signed that bill into law.
It marks the first time that the federal government has directly negotiated with drug makers on behalf of Medicare beneficiaries. So it would be a big impact on those folks.
You mentioned the tax on tips policy. We talked about this on the show earlier. This has gotten a lot of attention this week. What is the deal here?
It certainly has gotten a lot of attention. Yeah, this was something that Trump actually brought up in his speech at the RNC, and he kind of told this story of a Nevada waitress telling him that the government was after her tips in the form of taxes. That seems to be the origin of all of this. And then, really interestingly, Harris endorsed the plan as well at a recent event in Las Vegas. Now, part of the reason this seems to be coming up is because there is an extremely strong and influential culinary union in Vegas that has often helped Democrats win elections in the state. So appealing to an issue that is critical to them in a state that we think is going to be very, very close makes political sense. However, economists have kind of largely panned the idea. Some have said it wouldn't be equitable, it could lead to lost revenue, and would be hard to administer.
Right. So we started this conversation saying that the economy and inflation are really important to voters. What do we know about how voters are responding to what the candidates are saying right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, particularly for Harris, as a lot of the policy begins to take shape, and we'll see how people digest that later. But really, going into this election, voters have been really unhappy with the economy under Biden. And so the job for Harris is to navigate how to kind of both take credit for the things that have worked while also acknowledging it's still a problem and offering her vision for how to fix it. But in the polling, there's some interesting and perhaps good news for the Harris campaign. Even though voters are frustrated with Biden's economic record, so far, they don't really seem to be blaming Harris for it, or at least not blaming her as much as perhaps they were blaming Biden when he was the nominee. Mm. For example, in a recent survey of a number of swing states, voters said they did trust Trump more to get costs under control, but the margin was not very large. You would think it might be larger given some of the broader economic pessimism numbers that we have seen. And other polls have shown Harris narrowing the gap on that issue as well. Mm. So I think pretty clearly former President Trump wants the election to be a referendum on inflation, on the economy under Biden. But if it's not, it could prove to be a bit more of a challenge for him to win the White House again.
Gideon Resnick, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Anytime.
Let's move now to another major issue that voters say is important to them in this election, immigration. For years, the United States government has been enacting policies to discourage migrants from coming here. But Atlantic reporter Caitlin Dickerson found that not only are those policies not working, they are contributing to so much suffering and so much death. For this extensive piece of reporting, Dickerson traveled to the Darien Gap. It's a 70-mile stretch of mountainous rainforest spanning northern Colombia and Panama, the only way to travel from South to Central America by land, and just one part of the migration route to the United States. There are vipers and jaguars. You have to cross rivers with strong currents. It's so dangerous that Dickerson told us that for centuries, it was considered impassable.
It's an incredibly dense and dangerous jungle, very thick foliage, all kinds of trees and bushes. You know, there are times when you're in this jungle, and if you get separated by people you're traveling with by 15 feet, you might feel you're completely alone. You know, I had that experience of looking around and thinking I might have gotten lost. And the people I was with were actually still pretty close by, but I couldn't see them because it was so dense.
Despite the dangers, it's estimated that around 800,000 migrants will cross the Darien Gap this year. That's a 50% increase from last year. And children under five are the fastest growing group making this trip.
And I think I've been asked many times, and one can't help but think it themselves, you know, how do you make the decision to bring a baby into the Darien Gap? And the answer is that very often, whatever these families are leaving behind was worse. Sometimes the choice is between death that feels more certain and the possibility of living. I know that's really hard for a lot of Americans to wrap their minds around, but that's really what you're dealing with in a lot of cases.
As the U.S. has stepped up the pressure on Latin American countries to close off other more established and safe passageways, cartels have seized on the opportunity to turn the Darien Gap into a trafficking superhighway. They put up clips on social media and make it easy to book your trip online.
Added to all the factors that are fueling global migration right now, you know, conflict and climate change, poverty, instability, add to that is now the profit motives of cartels who want to encourage everybody to migrate because it means more money for them, right? Not just people who feel like they need to migrate, but people who haven't even thought about it until they see advertisements on the internet telling them about a relatively easy trip, you know, something that a lot of people fall for and then find out, obviously, when they arrive that they're in for something entirely different.
Dickerson tells the story of a woman from Vietnam and her 9-year-old son, who probably would have never crossed if she hadn't seen videos posted online by smugglers who made the journey sound a lot easier than it was.
She had no idea, and she actually thought she'd be walking on a paved road.
That mom lost her son while they were trying to cross a river. She messages Dickerson often with pleas for help.
Will you help me find my baby? Please help me find my son. What do you think has happened to my son? One of the last messages she sent to me was, I'm always waiting for news of my baby.
This is a story about the people affected by faraway policies. You can hear more from Caitlin Dickerson in this week's episode of Apple News in Conversation. If you're listening in the Apple News app right now, that episode is queued up to play for you at the end of this show. Before we let you go, here are some other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Starting tomorrow, significant changes are coming to the way real estate agents make money. The main one involves commissions, which are typically around 5 to 6% of the sale price. After a multi-million dollar settlement earlier this year with the National Association of Realtors, buyers who previously didn't have to pay a commission to their realtor could have to pay for the service. In other words, sellers will no longer be expected to pay for the buyer's agent. The specifics of who pays who and how much can still be negotiated. Industry analysts call it the biggest change in America's real estate market in a century. We've picked out a Wall Street Journal article that answers various questions buyers and sellers may have. In other news, five people are charged in connection with Matthew Perry's death. The Friends actor drowned in his jacuzzi last year with ketamine in his body. Investigators say they found a network of drug sellers and suppliers they allege provided the ketamine that killed Perry. U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada explained.
These defendants took advantage of Mr. Perry's addiction issues to enrich themselves. They knew what they were doing was wrong. They knew what they were doing was risking great danger to Mr. Perry, but they did it anyways.
The AP reports that this isn't the first time a celebrity's drug-related death has led to prosecutions. Michael Jackson's doctor was convicted of involuntary manslaughter in 2011 after he died of a lethal dose of propofol. And two men got long prison sentences for supplying the late rapper Mac Miller with fentanyl. And finally, you might remember earlier this year when Sesame Street's Elmo asked a simple question on social media and kicked off some big conversations. All he said was, Elmo's just checking in. How's everybody doing? Over 20,000 replies poured in, with lots of people unloading some pretty heavy emotional baggage. One person wrote back, the world is burning, Elmo. No amount of tickles can fix this. Others talked about being laid off, being tired, being stressed. The comments were so intense that Sesame Street teamed up with a polling company to ask Americans about their mental health in depth. Nearly half of people say their families are still experiencing negative effects of the COVID pandemic. Those numbers are higher among young people and people of color. A vast majority of poll respondents want more investment in mental health in America. There was overwhelming agreement that we could all benefit from more kindness in our society. More than 90% of people say they committed an act of kindness recently. Sesame Workshop says it's glad Elmo opened up a new conversation, and it'll continue to check in with Americans on how they're doing mentally. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're listening in the news app right now, as promised, we've got that episode of Apple News in Conversation queued up to play for you next about the dangerous journey migrants make through the Darien Gap. Enjoy your weekend, and I'll be back with the news on Monday.